Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Welcome to Next Generation Generosity. This is going to be a fantastic conversation with some leaders who are really at the forefront of trying to help church leaders, really as you try to engage with the people in your church, particularly around generosity. And we know that at the end of the day, a part of what we're called to do is to help people live a generous lifestyle. And today we're going to talk about some tools and some approaches and a particular study that's been done on this conversation. And so we're going to just go around the bullhorn, maybe start with you, Steve. Why don't you introduce yourself in your organization, then we'll go Derek and Randy. So Steve, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what is it that you do?
Thanks, Rich. Hi, my name's Steve Caton. I'm part of the leadership team here, Church Community Builder, and I am also an avid skier. So living in Colorado is a good thing for me. I'm here looking at Pikes Peak out my window. It always makes going to work really easy when you do that.
But, we don't have a view like that here in New Jersey. I'm looking out my window and I see the parkway. That's it. So
you got a nice office there, though.
Yeah,
looks good.
It's not a bad office.
you want me to talk a little bit about Church Community Builder?
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Church Community Builder as well.
Yeah, so just in a nutshell, what we really are, we're known for church management software. That's how most people in the marketplace know us, and that's great. We've been doing that since 2002. But the kind of the why behind that for us is that we really are inspired to equip church leaders to steward the people that God's brought to their church and help them understand whether people are moving forward in their engagement with the church and discipleship with Christ. Are they going forward? Are they going backwards? Are they kind of stuck? So that the church leader can be proactive about reaching out to those people and just loving on them and making sure that they're getting what we all hope that they get from their relationship with our churches and with God. And we do that through the software. We also offer coaching that really is about aligning up software with processes in the church and that sort of thing. And then we offer a peer-to-peer learning community strategy called Tribes, which has been a lot of fun too. So in a nutshell, that's who we are and what we do.
Very cool. Derek, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about eChurch Giving as well.
Sure. Hi, everybody. If you can see me okay. My name is Derek Gillette. I started on with the eChurch Giving and PushPay team about 90 days ago, so I'm hoping for that 90-day review to go well, which is sometime next week or so, fingers crossed. But the team's been great over here. You know, it's growing like crazy. Even though we've been around as a company for 2-3 years, we're just kind of launching in the States about a year ago. Mm-hmm. Really focusing on how do we help churches and faith-based communities engage those new and young givers, especially. You know, we just have this idea that there are always going to be that faithful 20%. They're going to give no matter what method you put in front of them. But then how do we increase that number to 25 or 30% just simply by the tools and making things really easy and accessible. So I've had a really great time these last 90 days just having a ton of conversations with pastors and other church leaders. You know, we were able to turn some of those conversations into a short little ebook called Be Prolific, which is available on Noisetrade right now, which was pretty fun to talk about. And personally, my wife and I have 5 kids, if you can believe that. I mean, the haircut and the shape. But it's been a ton of fun to be a dad as well.
Nice. Very cool. Well, Randy, we're so glad you're here as well from MAG Bookkeeping. Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and also about MAG?
Sure will. Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm a recovering executive pastor. So spent 13 years, wonderful years, as an executive pastor at a church in Tennessee that grew from 400 to about 3,000 people. When it got to that size, I realized that my gifts, passion, and ability and the church's needs had grown apart, and so it was pretty clear God was opening a door for another chapter. Spent 5 subsequent years doing church consulting across the country with churches, especially that were growing in need of expansion and structural change and that sort of thing. One of the things I noticed about a lot of them, not everybody, was that their finances in financial reporting oftentimes was a mess. And so met my old friends and colleagues that had started Mag Bookkeeping as part of a larger company to serve churches, doing bookkeeping, but more than that, doing financial, all things financial, payroll, offering some CFO coaching and consulting, and just really allowing pastors and church leaders to focus on ministry and basically say, we've got your finances. Mm-hmm. We've got it for you, and we can handle it. And so I'm the VP of operations for Mag Bookkeeping, and we serve churches really across the country mm-hmm. with virtual bookkeepers across the country, and we are privileged to get the best of the best because our team loves getting to stay at home and work a flex schedule, but use their gifts and abilities as bookkeepers and their passion in local churches. So wonderful to see the convergence of these folks with churches across the country that really need the services. So that's a bit about us.
We're recording this in January. That must mean that this is a busy time of year for you, right? There's a lot going on. Being a church leader, trying to close our books for one in one church, I can imagine what it must be like for you guys trying to close the books on all of those churches.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Well, we're going to be taking some questions hopefully later on. If you've got questions, please just feel free to enter them into the side box there. We'll hopefully get to some of those. But Steve, why don't we start with you? Why did you set out to do this next generation generosity research? What were you thinking when you said, hey, we need to set out and maybe put together a bit of a report here?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things struck me, Rich, that I wanted to dig a little deeper on. Number one, just as I think about my giving habits and the giving habits of all of my peers, and I, by the way, I'm not like the youngest guy on the webinar, so you know, I know that this a lot of what I'll share is sort of native to this next generation of givers, but I think that what we're going to talk about is also more native to people that are kind of in their 40s and 50s than we realized. So I just kind of hanging out with people that I hang out with, I noticed that no one carries checkbooks anymore. Right. And you see I watch the offering plate go by in the church, and I see hardly anybody putting cash or checks in there. And so I'm like, I wonder how people are giving to the churches that I'm visiting. And so I would go look at their websites and things like that to see how easy they were making it for people to give online, and you just see kind of a real wide variety of experiences there. So I was just curious and really wanted to dig into that. The second thing is that before I came to work for Church Community Builder, I worked in the nonprofit world. Okay, and so I was in the nonprofit world. They've been wrestling with this online giving and digital giving thing for a little longer, I think, than the local church has, and has been a little ahead of the curve in terms of trying to meet that demand. And what I've seen there is some pretty amazing statistics about what happens when they make giving easier through digital venues. And I just was curious to see if we would see that same kind of result in the local church with the sampling that we were looking at.
Nice. So now, Derek, kind of following on with that, you know, what are some of the best practices that churches are finding when it comes to this kind of whole implementing both, you know, online and mobile giving? What are some of the things that you've learned through this, you know, this process?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of technical aspects to it, of course, that we know. But I would say that the biggest thing to start with for churches that are kind of considering how to reach those new givers is just the belief or the mindset of your church and of your board and of the people in leadership. Mm-hmm. We know that a lot of things with faith start with a belief system. And so the thing that we really talk to a lot of churches and pastors about is just that technology doesn't have to be the opposite of obedience, and that there's a way to kind of combine those two things together. And so I think that would be kind of the biggest best practice that I would recommend to people. One of the analogies that I like to walk people through, because I'm a big fan of metaphors and analogies, is just to think about the evolution of the camera. And how the camera used to be this specialized tool that only the best of the best could do. If you think about like Civil War pictures and portraits of Abraham Lincoln, it was just this lengthy process where you had one shot to get it right. And then turning into, you know, the film camera, and everyone would have a camera but still the delay between pushing click and then getting that processed was lengthy. It was days, and sometimes that film would never get processed. And so the the number of moments that were captured were still less than could be.
Mm.
And then when we had the digital camera and then finally the smartphone, that really opened up this idea that every single person can be a photographer.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think that there was a little bit of a belief or a mindset switch that happened, where why would someone now pull out a disposable camera at a wedding, which they used to do,
right.
Everyone there is a photographer and everyone can in real time share and capture the moments and the memories. Mm. I think with the camera, it's easier for us to really understand that's not causing any pain or harm to people. It's really just opening the door for really great things to happen and for socially people to be brought together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that it's a really tough thing for churches because it does feel like technology sometimes goes against faith and heart and obedience. But we would just love to encourage them to kind of talk and dialogue through that to find a way to marry those two things together.
Okay. Now, Randy, you work with a lot of different churches across the country. What have been some of the benefits that churches have found as they start to shift towards more kind of mobile giving? Obviously, this might begin to tap some of the research that came out, around some of the responses. Why don't you kind of give us a sense of that?
Yeah, I think that oftentimes people may think incorrectly about this subject, thinking that the church is creating something instead of removing an obstacle or a barrier. And I think one of the things that's incumbent on leadership is to remove obstacles or barriers.
Okay.
And recognizing where people are, where our culture is, how rapidly things have changed in the way people transact, mm-hmm. and pay things. I think it's really important to keep up with removing obstacles or barriers that are artificial, and allow people to do what God's leading them to do. And particularly with younger folks that, many people under 30 probably don't even know how to write a check.
Right.
They probably have never written a check.
Right.
And, so that's the approach that I think is important to keep in mind, is this is a, we've allowed barriers to form because we haven't kept up with where people are and what they are. And so as we call people to things, let's make it as easy as possible. Derek used the word obedience. I think it's a good word, mm-hmm. to be obedient to God's leading in this area. Mm-hmm. So.
Nice. So, Steve, quick question to you, kind of twofold. First, if a church, is looking to set out to kind of add some next generation giving solutions, some of the things that we talk about in the report, what are some common pitfalls? And then isn't just mobile giving, isn't that just for small amounts? Isn't that just going to, playing a little bit of the devil's advocate here, isn't that just about, text, Red Cross to 10-10-10, and you're going to give $5. Well, I'm sure the people who are listening in realize that the church isn't driven, financially on, donations by that. So why don't we talk a little bit about those two. So what are some common missteps? And then isn't this just all about, small donations?
Yeah. Wow. I love the second question. So definitely look forward to answering that. I'll save that one. So I'll talk about the pitfalls though. Mm-hmm. Here, the pitfalls that we see commonly with any kind of digital giving, implementation of digital giving, there's two big ones that we experience. One is that whatever tool is chosen makes it just too complicated, right? You've really got to simplify that process for the giver. If they've got to fill out too many fields, complete too many fields, or they have to be left-handed and blue-eyed to be able to sign up for recurring giving, they're gonna opt out of that process really quick. So
right.
Solutions that require too many steps is a pitfall. And I'll say that sometimes this falls on the church too. And mm-hmm. you've probably seen this, Rich, where a church will say, "Hey, if you want to give, click here," and then they take you to a page where they talk about where they try to preach a sermon on giving.
Right.
And then at the bottom of the page, there's another link to actually go give. And it's like, mm-hmm. no, you need to. If someone's prompted to give.
Mm-hmm.
you need to just make it really easy and let them give right then and there. And so that's one of the biggest pitfalls we see is they just make it too complicated. That's one of the reasons that we love eChurch Giving and PushPay is because their tools just make it so easy. Mm-hmm. To give. If I'm prompted to give, I mean, I can do it in a matter of seconds. So that's a key. Second pitfall, and this might be unique to us here at Church Community Builder, but when churches have separated whatever that giving tool is from their church management system, what happens is it is one of the most important indicators that we have for discipleship and growth is giving, right?
Right.
When we have that data separated from the other data that we have about serving, about small group attendance, and the other things that we kind of look at to measure church engagement, then we're missing a huge part of that picture. And I've seen it happen so many times where churches make judgments and decisions about an individual or a family's engagement just based on giving alone, and they miss the fact that they're serving a lot, or they miss the fact that they're highly committed to their small group, and that's a big mistake. And so, conversely, we also miss the opportunity to engage in a ministry conversation where we might notice a trend. If we have all of that blended together, we can kind of look at it in context of other things and go, "Huh, something's changed here. Let's call them and see what's going on," and then that creates some really amazing ministry opportunities. Mm-hmm. And when you see that giving separated, that data separated from your church management system, those things happen all the time where we just miss ministry opportunities and we misjudge people's engagement because we're only looking at data in silos. So those would be the two big ones there for me, Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. I can speak to the simplicity thing. A few years ago, we redid our website, and our giving stuff used to be buried. Like, you couldn't find it anywhere on our site. And you know, it was a bit intuitive. We moved it. We said, we want to make this as easy and as, you know, up in people's face as possible without screaming with a big red Give Now button, but basically did everything but that. And you know, we ended up paying for the website redesign just with online donations in like 3 weeks. Like, it was like, you can see the line on our giving, you know, online giving. It was like this, and then it just jumped. Yeah. And it literally was, we moved it to a much easier place to find on our site. So I, you know, totally agree with that. What about that second question around, you know, isn't mobile giving particularly, isn't that just all small, you know, pieces, which is, obviously every donation is important, but, you know, isn't it just small denominations?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of times that's true, that there are smaller denominations that are being given through those mobile giving venues and text to give and that sort of thing. In general, that might be true, but here's what we forget is that when that becomes a cumulative thing, that's a big deal. So one of the things that we learned in the nonprofit world that did actually bear itself out in this study as well, that there is an increase if somebody's giving offline and then you let them start giving online, whether it's, you know, through the website or through mobile or what have you. Their giving goes up overall. They'll give more money than they were giving before. Why is that? I don't know. Maybe I think it's just because it's easier, right? And so people get prompted to give for all kinds of different reasons. And when we make it easy to give when they're prompted, we're going to get a little bit more money. So our statistics show that I think online giving versus offline giving, when people were implementing these tools, giving was going up, you know, 3.8, almost 4%, something like that. Well, that in and of itself doesn't add up to a lot of money. So if someone's given, let's say, $4,000 a year, it's, you know, what is it, $150 more. But look at what happens when you multiply that in a church of even just 400 people. Right. You're talking about, you know, $60,000 or more of new income that's coming in from those little incremental gifts that people weren't giving before. So I think we're really missing the boat when we just say, yeah, well, it's just incremental small gifts that we're getting now. No, it might be, but the cumulative effect of that is very powerful.
Derek, are you there? You seem to have switched to just an icon. Are you there, or did you change?
Sure. No, my camera just shut up. Sorry
okay.
about that.
Okay, no, that's fine. Great. And that actually ties in well, kind of where I had a question for you around simplicity and kind of, you know, the push pay solution, eChurch giving solution is very straightforward. You'll get a kick out of this. I was at a church just last weekend. I was visiting, you know, a very hip church here in New York City that name rhymes with Donkey Kong, and And it was so fun because I knew this was coming up, and they just in there during their offering talk talked about how they were doing push pay, and the guy beside me literally did push pay, and so that it was kind of a fun experience. But what role does simplicity play, do you think, in making an effective solution for people, actually in the pews or in our churches, when you think about online or mobile solutions, what role does that play, with you?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to move the conversation to very practical away from theory, too.
Right.
We had this whole theory, back in 2011 when they started the company, was that we think that people will give more the simpler the process is.
Right.
And as we were launching into the faith-based market in 2013, they really decided to test that theory out. Mm-hmm. So we just had a mobile app. Now we have kind of a lot of other things, but we really just had this beta version of our mobile app that we gave to 260 churchgoers. Those churchgoers were spread out at a couple different churches. Mm-hmm. We just tracked their giving habits for the next 3 months to see what impact having a 10-second mobile app would do on their giving. Mm-hmm. We grouped these people into three categories based on their giving history. So we had our regular givers who were always giving once a month. We had our intermittent givers who were giving, 1 to 2 times every 90 days. Mm-hmm. And then we had the people who had never given before to a church. So what we saw after the end of that 90 days is that the people who were regular givers were now giving an average of about $50 more per month. Mm-hmm. Intermittent givers were giving about $75 more per month. And the brand new givers were giving an average of $143 more per month. And that was, nothing else had changed other than the company had put in their hands the ability to do a mobile payment to their church and have it happen as quick as 10 seconds. So now fast forward to 2014, and we've been on with some churches for the entire course of the year. And so we had a church who was generous enough to let us track their giving for the entire course of 2014. Mm-hmm. The one point that is really, really interesting to note for this, because I won't take up too much time here, but for this church in 2014, they saw an average of 24 new givers every single month. So January was 24, February was another 24, and that those 24 givers were giving an average of $150 each gift. Hmm. So when you're talking real practical terms for a church, that's an extra, in this case, for this church, $3,600 every single month that would grow and build and build and build. Mm-hmm. And so again, technology isn't everything, but there is just this weird connection between we now have this 8-second attention span because of all of the stuff that's around us in our life. So there's this weird connection between simplicity, being able to respond in a moment, making it as quick and easy as possible, and the obedience that we were talking about at the start.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, I hope people didn't miss that there. There were some really good nuggets around. This is, if your church is looking for a next step on the stewardship kind of generosity side, this is critical. And we're seeing, just real results, in churches. And, it's really definitely worth the risk, the new step for your church. Randy, your company does work with a lot of churches, in a lot of different types of churches. What other things are you seeing from your clients in regards to stewardship? What are some of the other things we're seeing in kind of the generosity stewardship sphere?
Sure. Again, speaking in generalities, not necessarily specific details, but in general, we're seeing that more now than 20 years ago when I became an executive pastor. These are changes I've seen. Money follows vision now more than ever, not budget. Mm-hmm. So you can tell people we're 10% below budget. They don't really care.
Right.
They do care about vision not being met. And so connecting the generosity and giving to things happening is really more critical now than ever. Mm-hmm. And so it's incumbent on us to always be casting vision. Bill Hybels said years ago, vision leaks, and he was right. It does. And so especially in the busyness of life, people can forget. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I, and these are not always connected, they're just disparate things that we've seen. Mm-hmm. Long-duration capital campaigns seem to be less effective for a lot of young churches now than they used to be. Mm-hmm. I have a theory about that. I think it's because a lot of our younger folks have never seen a financial norm, if you will. The last 7 or 8 years have been tough, and so it's been very, it's hard for a younger family to make a financial commitment multi-year given the backdrop or the history we've just been through. And I think it may, that may never come back. And so I think, but what we have seen be effective is shorter, focused campaigns or, you know, projects, if you will. End of the year, Christmas, over and above giving, those kinds of things have done really well when they're framed correctly and when vision's cast around those. And so even it even adds the necessity to have good, quick response and allow people to give in a manner and a means that best suits them. The other thing that we're seeing is that growing churches today are reaching, obviously, more unchurched people, and that's what we want. We want to see unchurched people reached. 20 years ago, a lot of alternative churches were attracting church people from other churches, and there was a lot of transference. Well, they already knew how to give, and they already understood some of that. To Steve's point about, you know, giving being an important part of discipleship and a metric toward discipleship, we've got to do some things really well to cement this and grow generosity with them. One is you have to be able to celebrate a first-time gift. That is a massively huge step for a new person, much more so than it would have been, say, 20 years ago. The second thing is challenging people to take a small step sometimes can be very effective. You know, I don't know if the concept of a 1% campaign to say, if you've never stepped out in faith in this area, just give 1% of your income for a season of time and try it out and see. And oftentimes that becomes an impetus for consistency, and then they can grow over time. And so you really are growing a giving disciple, I think, through that process. And it's amazing what happens to people's hearts when they start investing in God's kingdom. And then the other thing is always connecting giving to changed lives, because that's what people care about. And so, you know, if they don't care, well, they sort of care that you have staff and that the staff need to be paid. What they really care about is that your staff are effective at leading teams that impact people. So if we're not showing changed lives, life change happening, I think we're missing a great opportunity to connect people to God's, you know, to what God's doing in your midst. And I think we miss missed making that connection. One of the things Steve said a little while ago that I thought was really critical is silos of data. When you have siloed data, you have what I would call quantitative measures. When you start to break the silos down and allow them to lean against each other and work against each other, I think that's when you start having qualitative data. And qualitative data is gold for leaders. And so here's an example of qualitative data. Dollars given per worship attender. Debt per worship attender. Things like that are good examples of qualitative data that really help leaders lead to, at the next level. So,
yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. There's a lot packed in there. I, as a local church leader, you know, a couple things really resonated there on the front end. You know, we've been over this last couple of years. We're kind of in the pre-phase, getting ready for a one of those short-term capital initiatives that you spoke about, maybe an 18-month, two-year campaign. And over this last year, we made concerted effort to literally every weekend connect people's giving to the vision. And so every Sunday, thank you so much for giving. Because you gave today, this is the amazing thing that's happening. And, you know, and it and consistently, you know, literally every Sunday. And, you know, we that and an effective year-end campaign, our year-end campaign was a huge stretch goal. It was our biggest goal ever. And we ended up being just shy of 50% over response rate from it. So we blew the, you know, blew the doors out of it. You know, God did an incredible thing, which for us is exciting. We're like, hey, God's, you know, up to something. And so, you know, I really appreciate that. We have had some questions come in that if you guys have a few minutes, I wouldn't mind jumping into some of those. Sure. Steve, why don't we start with you? Steve, from your perspective, you know, from CCB's perspective, how many churches kind of by percentage are engaged with online giving?
Yeah, I saw that question when it popped up. And here's the, this might be a little bit skewed, right? Because pretty much every church that we work with does online giving. With our sample size for the survey was, I think, pretty close to every church that we work with. And so the churches we're working with, you know, if they're sophisticated enough to use a web-based church management system, then they're doing online giving.
Right.
So in terms of the percentage of churches that were doing what we would call the integrated online giving, which is what we were talking about there, and what I was talking about earlier, where it's not a silo, yeah, about 67% of our churches were doing that, and then the others were doing something different. So I don't know if that answers the question, but that's kind of what we saw in our sampling.
Okay. Derek, a question for you. You know, some older people, say 50s and up, have expressed fear about online banking due to debit, credit card information being compromised. I've had it happen to me twice. I've had twice my debit, thousands of dollars taken out of a debit account. It was amazing how quickly the banks give you your money back. That's an incredible thing. But that's out there, right, that people know that. You know, how do you address or how do you encourage churches to address that fear in their congregations?
Yeah, it's a very real fear, and you know there is that whole like really take care of your finances and take care of your privacy and security aspect, mm-hmm, that don't necessarily come from a company like us, but I would really, really encourage church leaders to have that as part of their teaching, along with having the tools in place. Again, technology doesn't replace obedience or practicality. And so making sure that you've got a really good plan in place for if a compromise does happen. I mean, companies like ours are required regulation-wise to have the highest level of what we call PCI compliance. And so from our standpoint, we're taking care of this data. And I mean, just if you walked through our office here, we just kind of have this own internal policy. If a person ever walks away from their terminal at our office and somebody catches them, like can get to their keyboard before they can, we all have to put $20 into a jar, which means we're so incredibly serious about that type of thing, but there are still going to be those breaches that happen, like you mentioned. That's just kind of the era that we live in until we move to more of a token-based credit card system. And so I would encourage churches to have that teaching in place as part of just kind of their curriculum as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Steve or Randy have anything to add on that.
You know, the only thing I would add to that would be, it's kind of like there's some personal responsibility, I think, in that too, right? If we don't ever pay attention to what's going on in our credit card and our bank accounts, well, then that's not, you know, there's some personal responsibility. We need to take some responsibility to just monitor that stuff, just like we monitor our credit and other things. So I don't think there's ever going to be a solution that's infallible, because the hackers are always going to find some way in. But it gets better all the time. Mm-hmm. But again, if we're just paying attention to what's going on in our accounts, I think that'll mitigate a lot of it. And as you said, Rich, if you find something that's fraudulent, the bank or the credit card company, they're awesome at getting that turned around really quick.
Yeah, so I'm not an expert in this stuff at all. These are the people you're talking to way to know about this stuff way more than me. But as just a user, having been through that twice, the one thing I learned is that it seems like the actual there's a higher level of risk with you handing a credit card or a bank card over to a guy at a gas station. There's a much higher, because that's where it happened both times with me, there's a much higher risk with that than there is with any of this online giving stuff. That it's the actual physical possession of the card, you know, anytime you, and it's like with your own personal computer, you know, if someone holds on to your, if you can get physical hands on your computer, they can do all kinds of problems with it. Yeah. Again, I'm not an expert in it, but that's my understanding.
I would add this just to that conversation, though. If you want to kill a ministry, mess up with finances, regardless of age, you know, the older folks certainly, but everyone. And so we're not approaching it as individuals, but as we work with churches, we are really diligent about coaching them never to have a financial problem, breach, or whatever, because we know what kind of destruction that could do to ministry.
Yeah, very true.
If people lose confidence in your ministry's ability to handle their finances, so they are going to be very reluctant to give. I don't care how you open the, what venue you offer them to give via. So.
All right, this question's for Steve. Scott asked this question. He's now, you know, Steve, this is him asking the question, not me. He's asking a hardball question here.
Okay.
There's a lot of talk, particularly in the Next Generation Generosity ebook, about how the impact of offering online and mobile giving. What is the incremental increase in giving from merely adding mobile if you're already offering online giving? Seems potentially misleading to lump the two options together for comparison to offering neither. So is that a sense on that? Do you understand the question?
Yeah, I think I understand that. And if I'm understanding that correctly, that might be actually a better question for Derek to answer, because
we're just
kind of looking at it as a whole for our churches, and maybe Derek can speak to the specific advantage of the mobile piece.
Cool. Yeah, happy to. So the one thing to say right off the bat is that the online and mobile is sometimes hard to track on the church's end. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what we're seeing too is what a lot of times we're calling a mobile experience is actually just a kind of a mobile version of an online page that someone is viewing on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that we measure it on our end, so that 2013 study that I told you about, that 260-person case study, when mm-hmm. we were looking at the $50 to $75 to $143 increase, that was just simply from a mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any way to compare that to online, what they were doing online, but that's straight mobile. The other thing I will tell you, too, is that we ran our December transaction numbers here internally. So we're working with several hundred churches.
Mm-hmm.
We took that whole bulk of data out, anonymized it, and we were able to just see kind of how much total giving through our system comes from a mobile versus online.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually saw 66% of all transactions coming through PushPay were mobile. And again, we have the ability to do mobile, online, etc. When we removed the reoccurring transactions, that number actually jumped up to 80%.
Hmm.
And so there is, I don't have like an exact, increment that would go up from online versus mobile, but I can tell you that the more and more people that are being introduced to mobile, the more people want to use that experience.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, this has been a great conversation. We're going to give each of you a last word, kind of a little bit of a lightning round. What would you say to church leaders? This has been a fantastic conversation, to learn. I know for me it's been informative, and I hope it's poked and prodded you, if you're listening in, to be thinking about mobile giving, online giving, next generation generosity in your church. And these are obviously great organizations to start the conversations with. So why don't we go Steve, Derek, and then Randy, and we'll wrap up there. So Steve, any last word? And then how can people get in touch with your organization if they want more information?
Okay, yeah. I think my last word is really just a sum up of what has already been said in different ways by all of us, and that is that we really just need to understand that in order to maximize the generosity potential that is kind of within our churches and our ministries, it's just really important that we remove as many barriers as we can to giving, and really, as Jesus talked about in terms of the gospel, reach people where they are.
Mm.
And we know that everyone's got different preferences in terms of giving, so let's not limit the number of preferences that we offer those people so that we can unlock all of that generosity that's latent within our churches. And then as far as getting in touch with us, churchcommunitybuilder.com is the web address. That's always the best way to do that. If anybody ever wants to interact with me personally, Twitter is a good place to do that. CCP Steve is my Twitter account, so I always enjoy connecting there as well.
Nice. Derek.
Cool. So the final thing that I'll say is just that I think all of us here on this webinar would agree that this, the idea of the culture of generosity, is of huge importance to us.
Mm,
mm. So even as technology companies, we're still continuing to explore how do we make sure that the culture of generosity is getting passed on to the next generation?
Mm.
That is one of the bigger concerns that we hear from pastors. If I move to online or mobile, that's a siloed individual experience
mm.
that don't get to watch their parents do that. And so then this dies even more and more and more. Mm. So I hear ideas even from denominational leaders like, well, we still want to have envelopes for online giving where they can check a box and say, I gave online, and throw that. Because they just want to make sure that there's a repeatable action that people can see and witness and kind of be ingrained into you. So I'm not saying that we have the best answer for how to make sure that happens, but then, you know, partnering with us isn't saying to your congregation, we're neglecting the importance of the culture, or we're neglecting the importance of those practices. It's just saying that this is now the easiest way for people to give, and we don't want to stand in the way of that, and then we're going to work together as a community and a church body so that we don't lose the community aspect of giving. So that would be my only last thing to say. You know, getting in touch with us is pretty easy. We just have the echurchgiving.com site. There's a bunch of contact forms on there on any given page, so go ahead and fill one of those out. But I'm also on Twitter on a regular basis, maybe a little bit too much. Derek Gillette Co. It stands for company because, like I said, my wife and I have got five kids. There's a bunch of us kind of tagging along. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Nice. Randy, we're a word from you.
Sure. Well, first of all, thankfully, this is easier than it's ever been. Technology is starting to become easier, especially if you partner with companies that really get church and really want to serve you well, and partner with partners that play well together, that work well together, understand each other, and have common values. So, and I certainly would include Derek and Steve and their teams into that mix with us. And so we love working with people that we see have heart and passion for church and want to really serve the church well so that leaders can continue to do what only they can do. Having said that, we try, regardless of whether we can ever serve you directly as a client or not, we want to serve the local church well. And so we try to keep good information on our website and our blog posts on a regular basis. Please visit us at magbookkeeping.com and check us out and just peruse resources a bit. And we try to stay timely and relevant for you. And we really do want to serve you well. I am randy.onge@magbookkeeping.com if you would like to email me. But you can also find that a link, email link that can get to me there from our website. So, love to connect with anyone and help in any way we can. And more than anything, see that you are well served so that you can serve the people God is sending your way.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for tuning in, friends. We're so glad that you've taken some time out of your day to listen in. I know that as a church leader, you have a lot of different things to wrestle through and think through, and this is an important one. So thank you for taking time, investing that today, whether you watch the live stream or listening in to a replay later. We're so glad that you've taken some time out. I really would recommend you reach out to these all three of these guys and their organizations. They are there to help, want to help your church go further faster, and it would be worth your time, effort, and energy to connect with them. So thanks so much and have a wonderful week. Hopefully things go well for the rest of this week as you prepare for this weekend of church services. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.